Beginning on the 24th of July of 2025, the world's attention suddenly and briefly shifted towards Southeast Asia, as the armies of Cambodia and Thailand clashed against each other in the most shocking eruption of violence the region has seen in decades since the turbulent Cold War era. Both sides deployed and fired heavy artillery, rockets, and drones against each other for days. Infantry battled against each other on the ground, Cambodian armor made attempted advances, and most shockingly, the Royal Thai Air Force deployed US-made F-16 and Swedish-made Gripen fighter jets to bomb multiple strategic targets across the border in Cambodia over several days, with claims by the Cambodian side that some of them utilized cluster munitions, historically marking the first time that Cambodian territory had been bombed since the American bombing campaign during the Vietnam War ended all the way back in 1973. Martial law was momentarily declared by the Thai authorities on their side of the border, while both sides accused the other of committing war crimes by bombing or shelling hospitals, schools, and cultural sites, and other civilian targets. In the middle of the fighting, Thailand's acting prime minister warned that the conflict had the potential to spiral out of control as the US government issued a maximum level 4 do not travel advisory for all areas within 50 kilometers of the Thailand-Cambodia border. By the end of the 5 days of ferocious fighting between them, when a tenuous ceasefire was finally agreed upon, hundreds of soldiers were potentially left dead, with the Royal Thai Army claiming that around 100 invading Cambodian soldiers were killed during just a single engagement near the Phu Phi area here along the border on the 25th of July, though Cambodia itself so far only recognizes 18 of their soldiers who were killed during the entire conflict, while Thailand recognizes 15 soldier deaths of their own. At least another 24 civilians across both sides of the border were killed during the 5-day conflict as well. Hundreds of other soldiers and civilians were injured or captured, and around 300,000 people were forcibly displaced from their homes away from the border. Now, the reason why all of this exploded so suddenly and caught the world's attention by such surprise is multifaceted. Stemming from rival powerful families in both countries with complicated dynastic ambitions and deep-seated nationalism, historical grievances and disputed borders that have festered in the background for decades. And in order to get to the bottom of why this explosion of violence between these two states suddenly happened here, and why it could still blow up again in an even worse way in the future, it helps to begin with the hotly disputed border between them and how it came to be in the first place. You see, both Cambodia and Thailand claim historical rights to a series of highly culturally significant temples along their border today that were constructed centuries ago by the sprawling Khmer Empire, which once dominated mainland Southeast Asia. At the empire's height in the 13th century, it spanned across all of modern-day Cambodia and large swaths of southern Vietnam, Laos, and Thailand, and constructed multiple spectacular temples and monuments all across its territory, like the well-known Angkor Wat and the currently disputed temples of Prah Vihear and Prasat Thawan Thom. However, the Khmer Empire began entering into a period of decline in the 14th century, and by 1431, it had collapsed completely. By the 18th century, Cambodia had been significantly weakened through territorial expansion by Vietnam and Thailand and forced into becoming a vassal of Thailand's. And then in 1863, a much weaker Cambodia facing pressure by both Thailand and Vietnam was pressed into becoming a protectorate of the colonial French Empire in order to gain protection, which began the French colonial period in Cambodia that would last for the next 90 years into the 1950s. Cambodia, however, which is basically a Khmer nation state where more than 95% of the population are ethnically Khmer still today, has always viewed itself as the historical successor to the ancient Khmer Empire and the rightful inheritor of many of the empire's most important creations, which is what they base their claim to many of the disputed temples along the border with Thailand on today. To make matters still more complicated, the historical Thai and Vietnamese conquests of the former Khmer territory over the centuries left millions of other Khmer today beyond the borders of modern-day Cambodia, in the Mekong Delta region of southern Vietnam, and across the border in southeastern Thailand, which has, at times, led to nationalist and irredentist claims arising in Cambodia towards both of these regions, and a sense of historical grievance towards both Vietnam and Thailand alike. And for their part, Thailand was also once a powerful kingdom known as Siam that similarly managed to carve out a sprawling empire across Southeast Asia by the 19th century. But then over a period of decades between 1863 and 1909, Siam suffered a series of major military defeats and territorial losses inflicted by the colonial French and British empires that cut the kingdom down to its current size. Siam was never outright colonized by the Europeans during this era and managed to become the only state in Southeast Asia to maintain their independence. independence. But their major territorial losses that were inflicted by the Europeans were at first incorporated into their colonies and were then later inherited by their successor countries like Malaysia, Myanmar, Laos, Vietnam, and of course, Cambodia. Since these losses, Thai nationalists have sometimes referred to these areas as the country's lost territories, and have compared the period between 1863 and 1909 as their version of China's century of humiliation, where outside European colonial powers forced a series of unequal treaties upon them during a time of historical weakness. Thus, Thailand eventually came to view their disputed territory with Cambodia today as a historical wrong that was inflicted upon them by colonialism, while Cambodia came to view the disputed territory differently as a historical wrong that was inflicted upon them by Thai expansionism. Among these losses and unequal treaties were the Franco-Siamese Treaties of 1904 and 1907, which were the ones that created the modern-day border between Thailand and Cambodia, and which first set the ticking time bomb into motion that just exploded with massive violence in our own times today. These treaties define the new border between French Cambodia and Siam as following the natural watershed of the local Dangrak Mountains, and they further stipulated that the border would be formally demarcated by a commission consisting of both French and Thai officials alike. However, French geographers began carrying out the border demarcation process without any assistance or input from the Thai side, and they ultimately produced a series of maps by 1908 that were printed, published, and submitted to both governments for approval. The problem is that these maps created by the French geographers at the time deviated away from the natural watershed significantly in some places, and it placed several of the most important temples located nearby on the Cambodian side of the border instead, despite them being on the Thai side of the natural watershed line that they had agreed would form the border, including the important Pravi Aur Temple. Even more confoundingly, different maps created by the French showed different things. Their 1904 map showed Pravi Aur as being located within Thailand, while their later 1907 map showed Pravi Aur as being located within Cambodia. Part of the problem is that the French geographers at the time used a rather imprecise mapping scale of 1 to 200,000, which basically gives a general layout of an area but isn't very precise. For comparison, the US military and most mapping agencies today use a much more accurate 1 to 50,000 scale for their maps, which are bigger and a lot more detailed, where even individual trees and houses can be seen. Currently, Thailand demands that the border with Cambodia be fully demarcated using the more precise modern 1 to 50,000 scale, while Cambodia continues to demand using the older and less precise 1 to 200,000 scale that was used by the French geographers for the 1907 map. For decades ever since, Thai authorities have loudly complained about the quality of the French surveys from this time period, and that the Pravi Aur Temple in particular makes much more geographic sense to be located within Thailand since it's A, on the correct side of the natural watershed that both the 1904 and 1907 treaties technically set the border to, and B, it's located up on a cliff that's really only accessible from the Thai side of the border anyway, compared to the much lower plains on the Cambodian side of the border. Nonetheless, the multiple deviations in the French maps that included temples like Pravi Aur on the Cambodian side were so minor that they weren't noticed by Thai authorities for decades until the 1930s, when they finally got around to conducting their own surveys of the border and noticed the mistakes. So no formal complaints about the border deviations were ever lodged by the Thai side for a very long time, which would later be used against them in international court while deciding the temple's ultimate status. In the meantime, the poor French map-making in the region would become a bit of a moot point, because in 1940, Thailand joined the Axis during the Second World War by allying itself to Imperial Japan, in the name of reversing their previous territorial losses inflicted by the colonial European powers. Shortly after metropolitan France and Europe fell under German and Italian occupation during the war, Thailand sensed a unique historical opportunity and launched an invasion of colonial French Indochina in October of 1940. They managed to quickly seize control over a swath of territory in modern-day Cambodia and Laos that they annexed in early 1941, including nearly all of the modern-day border region with Cambodia that contained all of the weird border irregularities around the temples that were set by the French decades earlier. Thailand continued controlling all of these seized territories throughout the rest of the war until shortly after Japan's defeat. After the end of the war, French colonial rule was initially re-established over French Indochina, and as a permanent member of the newly created United Nations Security Council, France threatened Thailand that they would veto their membership in the UN unless they returned all of the territory they had taken during the war. So, in 1946, after controlling the territories for the past 5 years, Thailand relented and returned all of the seized territories back to colonial French Indochina in modern-day Cambodia and Laos, which then reset the borders back to the ones that were set by the 1904 and 1907 treaties, including all of the irregularities around the temples. Within a few years, French Indochina began collapsing and Cambodia finally gained its independence from France in 1953, inheriting all of the treaties and borders that the French had negotiated with Thailand on their behalf over the past 90 years. Within months of Cambodia's independence, the Thai army, being well aware of the border irregularities and Cambodia's potential claims to all of them, moved in and occupied the Phra Vihear Temple that had ambiguous ownership, claiming it to be fully within Thai territory in keeping with the border following the natural watershed line. Cambodia, however, formally protested against this in 1959 and asserted their own ownership over the temple based on the 1907 French map and as a part of their own historical Khmer heritage. Unable to come to an agreement bilaterally, Thailand and Cambodia both agree to submit their dispute over the Phra Vihear Temple's ownership to the International Court of Justice, or the ICJ, and they also both agree to abide by the court's ultimate decision. A few years later, in 1962, the ICJ released its final judgment on the matter and awarded the ownership of the Phra Vihear Temple to Cambodia. The court based its decision on the 1907 French map being the final map that superseded the older 1904 map that previously showed the temple as being within Thailand. The court also ruled against Thailand due to the fact that after the 1907 map was published, clearly showing the Phra Vihear Temple within Cambodia, Thailand never formally protested against it for decades, which the court argued was a sign of Thailand's tacit acceptance of the situation. During the arguing in court in the early 1960s, Cambodia's lawyers brought up an instance where a Thai prince who visited the Phra Vihear Temple in the early 1930s apparently never complained about the hoisting of the French flag at the site during his visit, which Cambodia successfully used to argue the prince's tacit consent for French and therefore Cambodian control over the temple. Wary of this experience, Thai foreign policy experts have consistently warned against Thai prime ministers and royalty visiting the disputed temple complex ever since, for fear of giving Cambodia even more diplomatic ammunition to work with. Probably assuming that the court was going to side with them in their arguments, Thailand refused to recognize the ICJ's decision in 1962 despite having agreed to recognize it previously, and has disputed it ever since for decades. To complicate the matter even further, the ICJ's 1962 statement on the case didn't clarify which state actually owned the much larger disputed area of land immediately to the north around the temple. It basically just said that the temple itself belonged to Cambodia, but made no further comments on any of this area that the two sites also disputed around the temple, adding even further to the ambiguity of ownership around the area and providing Thailand with a tool they've used ever since to continue claiming the land around the temple in order to deny Cambodia any direct geographic access to it. Thailand ultimately reluctantly agreed to withdraw their soldiers away from the temple, but has never accepted Cambodia's ownership over it. Nonetheless, the dispute soon became dormant for decades because much bigger problems erupted when Cambodia collapsed into a state of full-scale civil war just a few years later in 1967, which heralded the beginning of Cambodia's greatest civilizational crisis seen in centuries. Cambodia remained consumed by a devastating civil war and a U.S. military intervention and bombing campaign that killed hundreds of thousands of people for the next 8 years until 1975. And even then, the faction that ultimately emerged victorious from the civil war were the Khmer Rouge, who set about transforming Cambodia into arguably the most radical and hardcore totalitarian state that the entire 20th century witnessed. Within only about 3 years in power, the radical Khmer Rouge regime killed as many as 2 million of their own people in Cambodia through mass executions, forced labor, and starvation, which eliminated around 25% of Cambodia's entire population. The Khmer Rouge also harbored extreme nationalist ambitions of re-establishing the territory that they believed Cambodia had lost since the ancient Khmer Empire days from both Vietnam and Thailand. The Khmer Rouge began launching raids across their borders into both countries that massacred thousands of Thai and Vietnamese civilians. And by late 1978, Vietnam had had enough of it and launched a full-scale invasion of Cambodia to topple the Khmer Rouge from power. It only took them about a month to do that by January of 1979. And Vietnam would go on to militarily occupy Cambodia for the next decade until 1989. The Khmer Rouge, meanwhile, though cast out from power, did not surrender. Instead, they fled to the jungles along the Cambodia-Thailand border and waged a violent insurgency against the Vietnamese and new Cambodian government that lasted for the next decade. Bizarrely, because of Cold War politics and Vietnam's alliance with the Soviet Union, China, the United States, and Thailand all began supporting the Khmer Rouge insurgency against the Vietnamese at this point. And so the Khmer Rouge continued holding on to Cambodia's seat to the United Nations for years after they were toppled from power, all the way up until 1993, well after the Cold War had even ended. The Vietnamese army eventually withdrew from Cambodia in 1989, and regular fighting between the Khmer Rouge insurgents and the government along the frontier with Thailand only ended after the conclusion of a peace agreement in 1991, after tens of thousands of additional combat-related deaths all throughout the 1980s. Thousands of the Khmer Rouge's remaining insurgents only surrendered and laid down their arms in 1994, after the Cambodian government promised them criminal amnesty if they did so. And the Khmer Rouge itself wouldn't formally dissolve completely until 1999, finally putting an end to decades of unbelievable instability and chaos that had reigned in Cambodia since the 1960s. And in the aftermath, the long dormant issue of the still unresolved border with Thailand and the ownership over the temples around it slowly began creeping back to the forefront of political discussion in both countries again. Things first came to a heated head between the two countries over this issue in 2008, when Cambodia decided to apply for the disputed Phra Vihear Temple to become a UNESCO World Heritage Site, which Thailand feared was a Cambodian strategy to solidify their claim to the temple and to the disputed land around it that they still claim to. Cambodia's application led to violent protests breaking out in Thailand that demanded their government act against it. And shortly afterwards, the Thai and Cambodian armies began clashing against one another in skirmishes around Phra Vihear and other less important disputed temples along the border. Over the next 3.5 years until 2011, these sporadic clashes along the border resulted in the deaths of 19 Cambodian soldiers and 3 Cambodian civilians, along with 16 Thai soldiers and 2 Thai civilians, adding up to 40 people in total who lost their lives. Throughout this period, multiple war crimes were also likely committed by both sides. Cambodia was accused of firing Russian-made Grad rockets indiscriminately into civilian villages on the Thai side of the border, while Thailand was accused of deploying cluster munitions against Cambodia on their side of the border that have left thousands of Cambodian villagers at risk of injury or death due to all of the unexploded ordnance left behind near their homes. By April of 2011, Cambodia filed a request to the ICJ for an updated interpretation of its previous 1962 judgment on the Phra Vihear dispute. A few months later in July, the ICJ rejected Thailand's counter-request to have the case dismissed and demanded an immediate ceasefire. The ICJ further ordered the creation of a provisional demilitarized zone around the Temple of Phra Vihear and the surrounding cliffs, and demanded that both Cambodia and Thailand fully withdraw their troops away from it, while they also ordered that Thailand cease obstructing Cambodia's access to the temple as well. Both sides respected these demands, and in the spirit of cooperation, Cambodia withdrew their application to name the Phra Vihear Temple as a UNESCO World Heritage Site too. 2 years later, in 2013, the ICJ announced its updated judgment related to the territorial dispute around the temple, confirming their previous 1962 judgment that awarded the temple's ownership to Cambodia, and this time also clarifying that the disputed land around the temple also belonged to Cambodia as well. And once again, Thailand rejected the ICJ's jurisdiction on resolving the border dispute and demanded that any final decision relating to it had to be negotiated directly between themselves and Cambodia bilaterally with nobody else's involvement, which Cambodia has continually refused to do since they have the backing of the ICJ. The dispute then re-entered back into a period of dormancy that faded into the background of the world's attention, but it continued festering there, still ultimately unresolved, until, of course, it exploded again in spectacular fashion over the summer of 2025. But there were other unique factors at play that led to the recent, larger outbreak of violence over the dispute in 2025 that were absent back between 2008 and 2011, that largely have to do with the competing rival familial dynasties that have dominated politics in Cambodia and Thailand for decades now, the Shinawatra family in Thailand and the Hun family in Cambodia. In Cambodia, a man named Hun Sen has dominated the country's politics for decades. He is the longest-serving head of government in Cambodia's post-independence history, having first risen to power as the country's prime minister in 1985 during the Vietnamese occupation in the aftermath of the Khmer Rouge era. And except for a brief absence between 1993 and 1998, he continually remained in office as prime minister for decades, all the way up until 2023, just a few years ago. To give you a sense of just how thoroughly Hun Sen has dominated the political environment in Cambodia, his full honorary title in the country that he was formally bestowed with was Lord Prime Minister and Supreme Military Commander Hun Sen. At the age of 71 in 2023, after decades in power, Hun Sen announced his resignation from the Prime Minister's office in favor of his son, Hun Manet, who immediately succeeded him in a sort of dynastic transfer of power, and who continues to remain in office today. Nonetheless, the elder Hun Sen still retained his position as the head of the Cambodian People's Party and became the president of the country's Senate after his retirement from the prime minister position, ensuring his continued influence over Cambodian politics from the sidelines with his son installed in place as the prime minister. Meanwhile, over in Thailand, a man named Thaksin Shinawatra managed to establish a parallel political dynasty of his own that, for a while, remained very friendly with the Hun family over in Cambodia. Thaksin Shinawatra, a billionaire business tycoon, became Thailand's prime minister in 2001, and very notably became the first ever democratically elected prime minister to ever serve out a full term in office in the country's entire history. During his first term in office through 2005, he also grew very close with Hun Sen in Cambodia, as the two men moved to anchor their own personal and political fortunes together. In addition to the disputed temples along their land border, Cambodia and Thailand have maintained a large maritime dispute in the Gulf of Thailand since the 1970s as well, a dispute that has grown increasingly contentious in modern times as the prospect of potential offshore oil and gas discoveries in the Gulf of Thailand has given both countries hopes of huge potential financial windfalls. In 2001, Thaksin Shinawatra and Hun Sen signed a memorandum of understanding that their countries would jointly develop the disputed maritime area in the search for potential oil and gas resources. But the plan ultimately went nowhere due to stiff resistance from Thaksin's political rivals within Thailand, who were numerous. Thaksin used his office as Thailand's prime minister to throttle and contain his business rivals while benefiting his own business empire, which infuriated the other big business elites in the country against him. He also repeatedly intervened in the affairs of the Thai military, that's always largely been a separate institution within the country independent of civilian command structures, which slowly began infuriating the country's powerful military establishment, monarchy, and royalists against him as well. Even the Thai king himself, a powerful and influential figure within the country, sharply criticized Thaksin's policies during his time in office, beginning a long-running personal feud between Thaksin and the monarchy. Thaksin's other policies he introduced, like a universal healthcare program, also made him an enormously popular figure with the everyday Thai people, which further alarmed the Thai business, military, and monarchist establishment that Thaksin had the potential to become the first truly civilian politician to ever manage to establish dominance over the country's political system. The Thai army and monarchy have long maintained their grip over the country through multiple coups d'etats against civilian prime ministers who have displeased them or have grown too powerful. Ever since Thailand transitioned away from an absolute monarchy in 1932 towards a constitutional monarchy, the Royal Thai Army, which has always remained closely aligned with the monarchy, has launched no less than 12 successful coups against the country's democratically elected governments, including against Thaksin Shinawatra in 2006, shortly after he won his re-election for a second term in office. His party was then immediately outlawed, and he was personally banned from continuing all political activity, and he left the country in self-imposed exile for the next 15 years until 2023. But during these 15 years of exile, Thaksin continued remaining a powerful and influential figure in Thailand and throughout Southeast Asia. He continued his close relationship with Hun Sen, who appointed him as an economic advisor to the Cambodian government shortly after his exile from Thailand. His continuing strong influence in Thailand also contributed to his younger sister, Yingluck Shinawatra, becoming the country's prime minister as well in 2011, until she was also overthrown by another military-led coup a few years later in 2014. Afterwards, both Thaksin and Yingluck Shinawatra sought refuge with Hun Sen in Cambodia. They each began visiting Hun Sen's home there so frequently that he even began referring to rooms in his house as the Thaksin Room and the Yingluck Room, much to the incredible annoyance of the Thai military and monarchy, who began growing even more skeptical of the Shinawatra family's close ties with the Hun family in a foreign country. In 2022, Thaksin managed to finally cut a deal with the Thai military and monarchy establishment to return back to the country again, and he did so the following year in 2023, ending his 15 years of exile. He was immediately arrested upon his return to serve out an 8-year prison sentence that he had been sentenced to in absentia. But the deal he cut led to his sentence being commuted to just 1 year in exchange for allowing more military-oriented parties into the coalition government. Around the same time in Cambodia in 2023, Hun Sen also stepped down from power and elevated his son into office. While the following year, in 2024, Thaksin's daughter, Penutarn Shinawatra, rose to power as the third member of the Shinawatra family to become Thailand's prime minister as well, once again setting the stage for a Hun in power in Cambodia and a Shinawatra in power in Thailand. But this time, the close relations between the two powerful families that had lasted for decades began fraying. After he returned to Thailand again in 2023, Thaksin began increasingly pushing Thailand to become an economic competitor with Cambodia. He first suggested building a massive entertainment center in Thailand to challenge the casino industry in Cambodia, which is an important business interest and revenue source for Hun Sen. Then, after his daughter became prime minister in 2024, the Shinawatras launched a crackdown on scam compounds that had proliferated across the border region with Cambodia, which were allegedly another large revenue source for Hun Sen and his family. These developments potentially made Hun Sen begin to feel threatened by the Shinawatras, while he had also likely grown frustrated with the Shinawatras' inability to maintain their power in Thailand the same way that he and his family had managed to do in Cambodia. Negotiations for jointly exploring their disputed maritime areas in the Gulf of Thailand for oil and gas had stalled out despite his agreement with Thaksin on the issue all the way back in 2001. And with complete political control over Cambodia, Hun Sen likely began feeling that he had held up his end of the deal, and that it was the fault of the Shinawatras and their inability to maintain political control in Thailand that had tanked the deal. In this heated environment between the families, Cambodian troops, potentially under Hun Sen's orders, allegedly first occupied one of the disputed temples along the undefined border in February of 2025, shortly after the Thai crackdowns were launched on the scam compounds around the border, reigniting the dormant conflict over the disputed temples again, potentially in an attempt by the Hun family to push back against the Shinawatras. 3 months later, in late May, the dispute escalated into a crisis when a Cambodian soldier was shot and killed by the Thai army in a disputed section of the border during a brief gunfight. Then, a couple weeks later, Penutarn Shinawatra, still Thailand's prime minister, attempted to call Hun Sen to discuss the crisis, but she was reportedly unable to directly reach him. Instead, Hun Sen called Penutarn's personal phone number to discuss the crisis, and for reasons that still currently remain unclear, Hun Sen recorded the entire phone call and then deliberately leaked it 3 days later on Facebook, which sparked a massive political crisis in Thailand. During the phone call, with an active armed dispute between the Thai and Cambodian armies ongoing on the ground, Penutarn Shinawatra referred to Hun Sen as uncle, a common term of endearment in Southeast Asia, and even more controversially, she told him point blank to ignore the opposite side, a reference to the Thai military establishment, and she even criticized one of her own generals who was in charge of operations in the border region. These leaked comments led to many Thais believing that Penutarn Shinawatra had effectively committed treason. And only a few weeks later, on the 1st of July, the Thai Constitutional Court voted to suspend her from office and elevated her deputy prime minister to take over as acting prime minister in her place. Shortly afterwards, Thaksin declared to a room full of journalists and politicians that his decades-old friendship with Hun Sen was over, while the Thai military and monarchy also sensed a unique opportunity to permanently remove the Shinawatra's influence from the country for good as well. They probably began viewing a potential conflict with Cambodia over the disputed border as a perfect opportunity to draw up Thai nationalism and political support after the removal of the younger Shinawatra from office, while also simultaneously casting the Cambodians as a major foreign threat that made Penutarn Shinawatra's comments leaked over the phone call appear all the more treasonous and heinous to the Thai public. The Thai military and royalist establishment also introduced formal charges of lèse majesté against the elder Thaksin Shinawatra for comments he had made a decade ago while he was in exile as well, which is a unique and highly punishable criminal offense in Thailand for insulting the country's monarchy. If Thaksin is found guilty of the charges, he could become sentenced to up to 15 years in prison, and at the current age of 76, that would effectively be a life sentence for him. So with both Thaksin facing the rest of his life in prison and his daughter removed from office, his old political rivals in Thailand are about to achieve what they've always wanted, removing the popular Shinawatra's influence in the country permanently. And in order to seal it, they had an incentive to push for conflict with Cambodia over the disputed temples to whip up old nationalist sentiments to shore up their own support. Hun Sen had strong incentives to push for conflict too, though, in order to whip up Cambodian nationalism and political support for his son and heir that he had just installed into power in the country. And so, in this perfect toxic mix of political pushes toward conflict going on both sides, On the 24th of July of 2025, a Thai soldier stepped on a landmine near the border and lost his leg. The Thai army quickly determined that the mine and other mines that they discovered nearby had been planted by the Cambodians recently, despite Cambodia being a party to the Ottawa Treaty that prohibits the use of anti-personnel landmines. Within hours, the Thai army announced that it was indefinitely closing large sections of the border and placed their troops in the area at combat readiness, while the government expelled Cambodia's diplomatic envoy and recalled their own ambassador to Cambodia. The next day, on the 25th, both sides claimed that the other's army opened fire along the border first, and so ensued the five-day war around the disputed temples and other areas along the border that potentially killed hundreds of soldiers in the most ferocious combat seen here since the Cold War. Despite the acting Thai Prime Minister's warnings early on into the conflict that it could spiral into a full-scale war between the two countries, that was unlikely to ever happen because of how incredibly outclassed the Cambodian military is by the Thai military. The Thai military budget is nearly five times greater than the Cambodian military's budget. The Thai military is nearly triple the number of active duty personnel, almost four times the number of armored fighting vehicles that are significantly more modern and up to date, and more than five times as many artillery systems. To make the military balance of power between them even more lopsided, the Cambodian Air Force and Navy are both practically non-existent compared to their Thai counterparts. The Cambodian Air Force has literally zero fighter aircraft and consists of just a handful of rudimentary utility helicopters and transport planes, while the Thai Air Force has tens of thousands of personnel and dozens of modern F-16 and Gripen fighter aircraft due to Thailand's close modern military alliance with the United States. Cambodia has a handful of modern Chinese-made anti-air systems, but they don't even have enough of them to fully cover their own side of the border with Thailand, the gaps of which the Thai Air Force were able to exploit during the war to break through and bomb targets within Cambodia with virtual impunity. And when it comes to their navies, the Cambodians only have a fleet with 20 light patrol craft and 200 motorized canoes with 4,000 personnel, up against Thailand's fleet being one of the very few in the world that possesses an actual aircraft carrier, along with multiple amphibious warfare ships, frigates, corvettes, landing ships, and patrol craft complete with 70,000 personnel, utterly dwarfing Cambodia's naval capabilities. In the event of an actual full-scale war between them, Thailand would be the odds-on favorite to win decisively, just like Vietnam was the last time Cambodia went to war with one of its neighbors back in the late 1970s. But just because it doesn't make any sense doesn't mean it can't ever happen. It didn't make sense for Cambodia to go to war with much more powerful Vietnam in 1978 either, but Cambodia's leadership at the time still chose to go down that road anyway. A factor that helps push both sides to a quick ceasefire this time around were both of their relations with the global superpowers, the United States and China. Thailand has been a strong U.S. treaty ally and arms customer for decades, dating back to the 1950s, but maintains close relations with China as well, while Cambodia is more heavily backed by China. Most of the Cambodian military's equipment is provided by China. China signed deals to transfer the Cambodians a number of their corvettes to bolster their navy, and since April of 2025, Cambodia has also become the home to the second official overseas People's Liberation Army Navy base here at Rayong that supports Chinese naval warfare vessels at a strategic location on the Gulf of Thailand, nearby to the South China Sea, which China claims in its entirety in disputes with Vietnam, the Philippines, and Malaysia. There were, and still remain, some fears that the Cambodia-Thailand conflict could become weaponized into a modern proxy war in Southeast Asia between China and the United States. But that's not what ended up happening this time around. Instead, both Washington and Beijing pressured both sides into accepting a rapid ceasefire. China offered to mediate the conflict, while China's foreign minister pinned the blame of the crisis on the lasting legacy of Western colonialism in the region, while U.S. President Donald Trump threatened to cancel trade talks with both countries and to impose steep tariffs unless they came to the negotiating table. Eventually, Malaysia, who currently chairs the annually rotating head of the regional ASEAN alliance that both Thailand and Cambodia are also members of, hosted representatives from both countries and managed to successfully mediate a ceasefire on the 28th of July that went into effect on the 29th, 5 days after the war had broken out. But the ceasefire, notably, didn't eliminate the underlying issue that had sparked the crisis in the first place: the disputed temples that continue to remain undefined. So while the ceasefire appears likely to hold in the near-term future over the coming days, weeks, and months, there's no guarantee that it won't just erupt again during another crisis further down the road at some point. After the first round of fighting over these disputed temples between 2008 and 2011 concluded with a ceasefire that didn't resolve the underlying issue, it blew up again for a second time in even more violent fashion in 2025. And so with another ceasefire in place that still hasn't resolved the underlying issue, it might just blow up again for a third round of fighting at some point in the future when one country decides that it's convenient to kick it up again. Thailand's continued stance on the issue makes it even more likely, since they still refuse to recognize any of the ICJ's rulings on the dispute and continue to insist on delineating the border bilaterally with Cambodia alone, with no outside mediators or influence involved at all, which Cambodia still refuses to accept based on their support from the ICJ's rulings. And for that reason, the world shouldn't ignore this corner of Southeast Asia. And it's important to remember that this will continue being one of the modern world's deadliest and most controversial territorial disputes. Now, Thailand and Cambodia are also known for a lot of other things besides their border disputes. And their food culture has absolutely got to be one of the top things. From sweet Thai chili pork fillets and lettuce wraps to coconut curry chicken and more. And if you're anything like me, you might also always be wondering why it still takes so much money and time to eat more healthily today. The global food supply runs more efficiently than ever, but there still seems to be this trade-off where you have to choose only two of the following three options with all of your meals. Healthiness, affordability, and quickness. You can have a quick and healthy meal, but it'll be expensive. You can have an affordable and quick meal, but it'll be unhealthy. Or you can have a healthy and affordable meal, but it'll be time-consuming and inconvenient. For a long period in my own life, I was really trying hard to figure out the answer to this dilemma by discovering a reliable source of meals that could encompass all three attributes: healthiness, affordability, and quickness. And that eventually led me to discovering and becoming a customer of what ultimately became this video sponsor, HelloFresh. The concept of HelloFresh is pretty straightforward. You just visit their app or website and select which meals you want to eat, and then the next week, an insulated box will show up on your doorstep filled with all of the fresh, pre-portioned, and partially prepared ingredients you need so that you can home cook your meals way faster than if you had wasted a bunch of time planning your meals out, going to the grocery store, and then coming home and prepping. You can also choose from a variety of menu options to suit all your needs and tastes. From fit and wholesome to quick and easy, vegetarian to family-friendly, there's something for everyone to enjoy. And HelloFresh knows that your plans might change and life can get unexpectedly busy. That's why they let you easily customize your delivery from week to week as well, allowing you to tailor everything to your own schedule by adjusting your delivery date or skipping a week when you're not able to cook at home. And best of all, the meals themselves just taste really, really good too. That's the biggest reason of all why I've been a loyal customer myself to HelloFresh for years now, and why I've been making meals like this amazing buffalo spiced chicken for more than 4 years now. They're just the best solution that I've ever found for having regular home-cooked dinners. And if you want to see if I'm right and improve the way you eat too, now's a great time to do so because you'll get 10 free meals plus free breakfast for life when you use the code RealLifeLoreFM after scanning the QR code, clicking the button here on screen, or by following the link down below in the description. One free meal per box with an active subscription. Free meals applied as a discount on first box, newer returning subscribers only, varies by plan. It's also a great way to eat delicious meals and help support my channel at the same time. So once again, use code RealLifeLoreFM at HelloFresh.com. And as always, thank you so much for watching.